This is Hash It Out with Jane.
Is a podcast that supports independent thought, personal responsibility, and social consciousness. My name is Jane Hash, and you are listening to Hash It Out with Jane. This podcast has been entertaining and educating listeners for over 3 years. Now it's time to switch things up a little bit. Every month on Hash It Out with Jane, we are going to have a different theme. So all of the episodes published in February are going to be about non-traditional relationships that Hallmark never told you about. Why? Because I hate Valentine's Day. And this is my podcast. So that's what we're going to do. I have plenty of love in my life. And I am nowhere even remotely close to being lonely. That is not why I hate Valentine's Day. I am just not a fan of any holiday that revolves around commercialism or makes people feel bad about themselves. So according to Jane Logic, the best way to get this conversation started is to consult with an expert on relationship dynamics. Get ready to have your mind opened, possibly beyond comfort level, and I'll be right back with Modern Lifestyles coach, Magdalene Morris. Hashing it out with me today is Magdalene Morris. She is a Modern Lifestyles coach, and we are going to talk about non-traditional relationships that Hallmark never told you about. Thanks for joining me today, Magdalene.
Thanks, Jane. Glad to be here.
So, how do you think heterosexual monogamous relationships became the norm?
Oh, goodness. Well, that's a PhD topic right there. And there's lots of theories. However, I think that they became the norm as part of the rise of the agricultural era, that when humans started to settle down and collect stuff, we realized that we needed to collect people as well. And the most effective way to collect people was to convince everybody that we are monogamous.
And statistically, that has not worked out very well.
I agree with that statement.
So does marriage always need to be the ultimate goal for a couple to be happy?
Well, you know, first of all, I would like to back up and say that for millions of people throughout history, monogamous has worked out, you know, all right, and has served their purposes. It's just that it's not the only marker of a successful relationship by any means. And those of us that have not practiced it successfully should not feel that historical aspect as a marker of success or failure. I guess that's more accurate on that. But to your question about marriage, no, absolutely not. I don't think that marriage is a requirement for anything other than clicking the marriage box on your taxes. It's helpful and it's a nice sort of agreement that people make, but as to being a necessary part of what's defined as a successful relationship, then no.
I often hear in the media the lack of distinction between polygamy and polyamory. Would you like to clear up what the difference is?
Well, sure. I mean, for starters, polyamory spans a wide spectrum of styles of relationships. And polygamy can actually fall within that spectrum. However, polyamory cannot fall into the spectrum of exclusive polygamy any more than it can monogamous, because polygamy is one man being married and therefore legally responsible for more than one female, whereas polyamory, it means multiple loves. It's a much more broad context. So hopefully that clears things up. Polygamy is a very specific practice. The Mormons practiced polygamy and still do in certain areas and certain groups, whereas polyamory is a fairly modern idea in terms of the name. I think it's a timeless idea. However, the name polyamory was created within our lifetimes, actually, by somebody that you and I both know. So Morning Glory Zell coined the term polyamory.
Huh. Very interesting. And just from my experiences and things that I have read, it seems like, and I could be wrong, that polygamy tends to be a bit on the misogynistic side.
Well, you know, it's funny because I guess it depends. Yes, I will agree it can be. However, just like monogamy, it's something that if the participants are all willing, mature members, then they can choose to make that work. So it's not, I don't think that polygamy is inherently misogynistic. I think that it may lend itself to that. And I think that there are particular cases where perhaps polygamy would be a helpful thing, just in terms of, let's say you're in a society where there's five women to every man. So then there might be some type of a benefit to that system. But in today's society, for those that are practicing it now, it's not really for me to judge whether or not it's inherently misogynistic based. I haven't seen that. However, I have certainly read about and heard many theories about how it disempowers and disenfranchises women. Oftentimes when you're reading about polygamy, you're also reading about it within the context of the laws that that particular religion has placed on it, such as women not being allowed to make decisions for their families or for their children. And I think that that's what you're referring to, are sometimes the religious and spiritual laws that can parallel it.
Are open relationships and polyamorous relationships one and the same, just different terminology?
No. They can be the same. You can have an open relationship within a polyamorous relationship. However, polyamory does not mean open. It means many loves. So, in other words, take my household, for example. We keep very close contact with one another about who we're seeing and when we're seeing and how we're seeing them. So my partners and vice versa all get to decide if they're comfortable with me seeing someone. So it's not open in that I can't just go out and have a one-night stand with somebody because that's what I feel like doing. For us, it's a very emotionally invested process that does involve asking for permission and working through it with each other before we go out with someone else. Now, I want to back up what I said just a little bit there, because there are people that have open relationships that are certainly emotionally invested. an open relationship is one in which the partners don't necessarily ask permission when they want to go out and be physical with someone else. So that's how an open relationship is defined, is one in which partners have absolute autonomy over their choices of who they're spending time with and doing what with. And there are many polyamorous relationships that are definitely not open.
When I was in open relationships several years ago, many less enlightened individuals interpreted that to mean that I would just have sex with anyone. And others I knew in open relationships encountered similar assumptions. Why do you think people are so quick to jump to that conclusion?
Well, I think that people are quick to jump to conclusions about any type of relationship that doesn't confine to the societal norm that is fed to us through the television set. So, you know, there's a mixture of curiosity, mistaken stereotyping, and just outright ignorance. But that having been said, this is a culture that until very, very recently was kept, you know, under wraps and secret. And you had to go to places like Starwood in order to meet people that you didn't automatically have to assume would have a negative opinion of you if they knew how you choose to share your life and your time. So I think that that is part of the process of being in such a small subculture, but I also think that it's a necessary process for us to provide education on so that opinions continue to change as they appear to be pretty rapidly doing. I teach a class at University of Cincinnati. Once a semester, I go in for a day and I talk about polyamory. And just within the few years that I've been teaching that class, the students have, because I ask the same questions during each class, give or take, about their opinions, and the opinions of the overall student body has actually changed quite a bit in terms of what they know and what they assume about relationships. One of the questions I ask them is, what is monogamy? And within, this is a class of about 200 students, and within 5 minutes, I can get them to a place where they're so completely confused that nobody in the room has a total agreement as to what monogamy is. And so when you look at the opposite end of the spectrum with open relationships, of course you're going to get the same result, if not more.
So as a modern lifestyles coach, I'm sure people come to you for advice on relationships pretty regularly. Is that an assumption or is that
true? Yeah. Right now, I should have my license to practice and call myself a counselor within 5 months. So I can't currently call myself a counselor, but yes, that's actually what I do for a living. I see clients, both single and couples, and I discuss and listen to what's going on with them and try to provide the framework and the environment for them to come to a greater understanding of how to get what they want. So yes, that's actually what I do for a living.
So if someone came to you who was not finding success in a traditional relationship and asked you, how many different types of relationships are there? What would you say?
I would say as many people as there are out there having them. I think that it's an assumption that we make as teenagers, and we're first starting to date, that everyone has the same definition of what a good relationship is or what a monogamous relationship is. And what we quickly come to realize is that that's not true. So, you know, we get our ideas of good relationships from our parents, from our own personal experiences, from television, from books, hopefully. And all that gets mixed up into what we end up with. But that's not the same as anybody else around us. So a lot of kids, you know, they assume, and rightly so, that a monogamous relationship means that if you're dating somebody and you say that, okay, well, we're dating and or we're going steady or we're a couple, a lot of people assume that that means you have agreed with me that you're not going to have sex with anybody else, flirt with anybody else, talk to anybody else, have interactions with anybody else. And it's just not true. At least it's not true that that's what the other person assumes it means. And so without having that conversation, you have no way of knowing what kind of a relationship you're actually in. And that first step is most commonly the one that hasn't been taken.
That what you say is the key to a successful long-term relationship.
many books have been written on this. However, and it's funny because whenever I come up, I try to come up with a simple answer for that, and then I come up with an exception to it. I was about to say maturity, but that's not true because I was not at all mature when I started my relationship with Gregory, my husband, yet we made it successful. It's helpful to have maturity, but I think that the biggest key and the one thing I can narrow it down to that both parties have to have is a willingness to work for the long term of the relationship. If both parties are willing to work on it and to examine themselves and what their part is, and what works and what doesn't, then they've got a really, really strong formula. The rest of it is important and should be looked at, but I think that the key is that both parties have to be invested in the relationship. And when I'm working with people and I see a couple, if one party really is not invested in the relationship, then that means that one person's bailing a two-person boat. You know, so really there has to be a desire for long-term health. And as long as you have that, then a lot of the other stuff, you know, with time can get worked out. You know, another really, really helpful aspect is an ability to see the positive in the other person. Because I think all too often we start picking out the negatives in somebody else and how they should change, when really we've never had power to make anyone change other than ourselves. And so if someone can develop abilities to see the positive in their partner and to see the best aspects within their partner, then that's going to give them a lot of strength during the less satisfying times of their relationship.
Now, Valentine's Day is coming up, and a lot of people find that to be a very depressing holiday. What are your parting words of wisdom to those who find Valentine's Day depressing?
Well, it's funny because I'm surrounded by people that I care about and that care about me. And I find Valentine's Day a stressful, depressing holiday from time to time. Not because of my own experience whatsoever, but because of the nature of the holiday itself. This idea that we have one day a year where we're expected to show our feelings towards someone else is kind of an absurd idea. Just in and of itself, it's kind of a silly idea. And the pressure that it places both on the couple and, you know, on the capitalist industry in which we live is a whole nother argument. However, if I'm talking to somebody and they're feeling Valentine's Day coming on and they're already talking about it in with all these negative associations, then what I have done in the past and what I have found works very, very well are two things. The first one is that Valentine's Day can be a love affair with yourself, because until you love yourself and become comfortable with just yourself, then it's much more difficult to be involved with someone else. So that's the first thing that I talk to people about, because you can throw a damn fine party for one with the chocolate and the bubble bath and the flowers and the whole nine yards and really get a lot out of that if you allow yourself to be spoiled, which is, after all, the whole key of Valentine's Day. And then the other thing that I suggest, because not everybody is that organized or invested, is to either throw a party or go to a party that has been scheduled sort of as an anti-Valentine's Day deal. Go somewhere where there are other single people and hang out, you know, so that you're not sitting home by yourself. So those would be my two suggestions.
Excellent advice. Thank you so much for joining me today and helping to educate people about all of the many, many relationship options there are.
Excellent. Anytime, Jane.
For more information about topics and people discussed in this episode, visit my blog at hashitoutwithjane.blogspot.com. If you have any comments, questions, or you just want to tell me how amazing I am, send me an email at hashitoutwithjane@gmail.com.